Hello, everyone. Thank you for watching another episode of The Naturalist Capitalist. I am still in my truck. It's been a long day. I know this is later than it was supposed to air, but I am here. We've got my friend Mike back on the show again tonight. How you doing, Mike?
Hey, man, how's it going?
Good. Your trucking day hasn't been as long as mine, right?
No. I did my trucking last night, and I've been sitting waiting to go into the shop today, but it's all good. We're all doing good.
Nice. And the guest that you guys are all here for, we've got Larry Sharp. He was vice presidential candidate a couple times. He ran for governor in New York. He's great. He's the guy who, you know, is the real Liberty Uniter. I like to say that I am, but I think he really is. He's the guy who kind of brings us all together. How are you doing tonight, Larry?
I like that I'm the real Uniter. Actually, just for clarification, I never was the Libertarian VP nominee. I ran the internal piece, right, which is not really running. I mean, it's not really running. So yeah, I ran for governor of New York. That was a real campaign. to become Libertarian Party VP, it's a campaign, but it's not a real campaign.
All right. So two fake campaigns, one real campaign, basically.
Bingo. I am the faker in chief. Correct.
So there's a lot of stuff going on in the country. There's a lot of stuff going on in the libertarian movement. Last time I had you on was back in like January, and we've seen a lot of crazy stuff happen since then. But overall, do you have an optimistic view for the future with the Libertarian Party, or have you gotten more pessimistic or more optimistic or about the same as it was at the beginning of the year? What do you think?
To be forward, I feel about the same. I think that it's good and bad that's bouncing together. And the bad is people are becoming so fed up that they're actually digging in deeper, right? So they're politicizing everything. So they're deciding that they're going into what I can't stand, which is blind obedience and blind rebellion. This is just the worst, right? I'm not gonna do it because Reed said so, or I'm gonna do it because Reed said so, right? Now, we should do it because Reed said so, and it makes sense to me. Okay, let's follow what he says, he's making sense, or doesn't work for me, I'm not doing that. But we're not doing that as a country, as a nation. We're deciding what is right and wrong by what our talking head tells us. So our talking head says, this is bad, I won't do it. Or it's good, I'm gonna do it. And that's disappointing because that does not breed libertarians, right? So that part's bad. But the good part is, since some people are saying, I keep doing this, but I'm getting no results, it does open us up to, if we can provide some hope, people come. People often say, Larry, how bad's it got to get before people, you know, change? It doesn't matter how bad it is. It's irrelevant. What matters is two things. It must be bad and they must see hope. If they just see bad, we just stay as humans in terribleness. And the example I give all the time is 1917 Russia. They were all serfs, you know, almost slaves, not really slaves, but as close to slaves you can get without being slaves is what the Russian people were for hundreds of years. They were in terror, and there were some revolts here or there, but nothing that was worth anything. It easily got crushed. Nope, they just sat there in poverty and pain for literally hundreds of years. Then here comes communism. You know, sorry for them that they picked the wrong thing, but for them, it was hope. It was like, well, it can't be as bad as this, could it? Well, yeah, it could be, but they didn't know that. All they thought was, well, this is some hope, and boom, now you have a revolution. So you've got to also have hope. And I think that our party can bring that hope. If we would focus, sadly, we're not focusing very well. But if we'd focus, I think we could do it.
Yeah, that was what I was going to ask, is what do you think libertarians are doing incorrectly? So you'd say we're not focusing well, we're not really resonating with the people on the things that matter right now. What exactly is it that we're not focusing on, right?
You might want to ask, what are we doing well? Because there's so much we're not doing well. Like, I could spend the next 6 hours on how bad we're failing. And I'm part of that, too. I'm not saying I'm out here outside of that, right? I'm in here, too. Same thing. I'm on the same dumpster fire with wheels, right? I'm on the same one. I'm just sitting here trying to put the fire out because I know without this dumpster fire on wheels, we're walking, and I don't want to walk. So I'm going to stay on a dumpster fire and keep putting fires out. And I'm hoping others will help. Sadly, some people keep putting gas on the fire and it's not helping. But any case, this is what we got. So I still think Libertarian Party is the best vehicle for change. As broken as it is, there's still no better vehicle. And this is why I'm on that vehicle, even though it's a broken vehicle. So that's why I want to stay. What are we doing well? We still do something very well, which you always have, which is get on the ballot. When it comes to getting on the ballot, Libertarians do it better than anybody else. It's not even close. If the Republicans or Democrats had to go through our hoops, they wouldn't be able to get on the ballot because they don't have the skill set, the knowledge, dedication, nothing to do it. Greens can't do it. Constitution can't do it. We are the best at getting on the ballot. We're very good. That's the one thing I never really worry about. I mean, I guess I should, but that's the thing I worry about least is that what we're doing poorly is we're still throwing up 17,000 candidates all over the country when we should be throwing up 3. I mean, that's really the issue. We are a small unit. We don't have many resources, and we constantly spread ourselves out. People get mad at me. People say, Larry, we got to run libertarians in every line. I haven't believed that in years, and nothing has shown me that I'm wrong, right? We should not. I want you to imagine something, and this is completely and absolutely biased on my part. 100% biased. I'm just being very clear up front. What if in 2018, we had thrown everything into my campaign? Everything into my campaign. I'm blatantly biased, clearly. But let's say it wasn't my campaign. Let's say that was Ricky Harrington's campaign. You know, some campaign that had real chance of getting exposure and hitting a home run. Ricky Harrington had a campaign that really could have done that, right? Let's say we had done that instead of the 18. We're going to run 8,000 libertarians who will, it will mean nothing 5 years from now. No one will care. But we'll get donor burnout. We'll get activist burnout and volunteer burnout. Or we could throw them all into Ricky Harrington. Or all into Larry Sharp, or insert anyone here. I know those two. There are others that would fit that bill also, right? But whatever, you decide. Whatever is the one you want to you throw our time into. Two or three of them, all of our money. There are, what, at least 100,000 libertarians across this country that actually donate something to a candidate or someone, at least. What if we just said, okay, Ricky gets 20,000, Larry gets 20,000, person B gets, C gets 20,000, and everybody give $5 a month for a year. That's $1 million per campaign. Think about that. What if Ricky Harrington had $1 million to run his campaign? Think about what he did without that. Changes everything. Well, Larry, why do you care about Ricky Harrington? Because if we get one star, everyone else benefits. Larry, how do you know that? Because I was not a star in 2018. I was a blip in 2018. But even with my blip in 2018, I crossed my state the year after in 2019. While I got my bucket in 2018, when I crossed state in 2019, I took the local press that I had garnered and the local name recognition that I still have in my state now, and I crossed the state, and we got 103 victories in New York State in 2019. We went from zero libertarians to 103. Sadly, I wasn't one of them. But that's okay. I helped to create those 103 by gaining ballot access, by showing them how to run, by building a team of people who now knew how to run from my campaign. Most of the people who ran came out of my campaign because they saw me run in 2018 and then learned and did it themselves in 2019 and picked my team. I went and raised money for them. If anyone's watching as part of the LP, you know, I go out and raise money for others often. I've raised over $500,000 for non-Larry Sharp libertarians, right? I raise a lot of money for the people. So if I could be more popular, boom. If Ricky Harrington was more popular, boom. So if we focus on one person who breaks the hole, everyone else can rush through. And that's what I did in 2019. And then, of course, the state decided, well, Larry, no, because we're the state, and we're going to wipe away your party and everything you did in a budget signing, which is what happened. And that's how we got trashed. So now I have to break a bigger hole in to make sure they can't close it. So what are we doing poorly? That. What are we doing well? Getting on the ballot.
Yeah. So, you know, you hear a lot of the Praxian movement that's kind of leaving the Libertarian Party. Something they're talking about is libertarianism.
You said Praxian?
Praxian. I don't know if you've heard that term much. So there's like a lot of people who have been in the Libertarian Party for a while. And then they've decided to leave because they weren't seeing any change. And one of the problems that they point to is a lot of people care more about libertarianism than they do liberty. And I kind of hear that in what you're saying right now. Like, everyone wants to get a participation trophy. Everyone wants to feel like they're running a worthy campaign. Everyone wants to feel like they're making a difference when maybe they actually aren't. And maybe we should just focus on the things that are attainable. Is that a good way to put it?
I think you want to fight the battles that matter. And I'll give you an example of the Lord of the Rings. I'm giving you some weird ones to know. But, and if you've probably seen a trilogy, the Lord of the Rings, right? Big trilogy, Lord of the Rings, people fighting, humans dying, orcs dying, dwarves dying, humans drying, all kind of crazy stuff, right? What matters? Ring goes in the volcano. That's it. It doesn't matter who fights. It doesn't matter who dies. If the ring goes in the volcano, battle over. Why are we fighting all these other battles? They don't mean anything, right? Stop fighting with the orcs and the elves. Don't do that. Go put the ring in the volcano. That's what I'm saying. So someone's going to say to me, well, Larry, you know, I'm unhappy because the Libertarian Party isn't doing anything. You're right, because what happens is somebody runs because they think they're going to change the world. And I get it. I feel that too, as everyone does. And you should feel that if you're going to run. I love that. Please keep thinking that. So I'm going to change the world. I'm going to run. Then you get your butt kicked, which is what most of us do when we run. It's how it works. And most people can't get back up after that. So they walk away from the party and go, party sucks. It didn't give me any support. Yeah, I could have told you that if you just would have asked me. The party's not going to give you any support. It can't do it. It's not prepared to do so. And it shouldn't. It cannot. That's not what the party does. You don't see me asking the party for help. You don't see me asking anybody for help. What do? I build my own team out and I go run. And I use Libertarian Banner, which is the value that it has, is the banner. I use the banner and I run a campaign. It's what I do. I'm on the phone calling people for money. I try to get donors. I try to get stuff, you know, to the best of my ability. I'm not against the party at all. I support the party tremendously. I'm a lifetime member. I still donate every month. So I support the party completely. All I'm saying is I don't expect it to help me and figure things out. If it could have done that, it would have done that 50 years ago. It's not going to. So just run. And here's my rule on running. And I say it all the time. If you don't have the time and energy and personality to run, don't run. But Larry, I'm principled. I don't care. Lots of people are principled. That's not impressive. Lots of them are. Are you principled and you have the time, the personality, right? And you have those things, right? Just being principled isn't enough. You can be principled and you will sometimes do more harm than good. You have to do all the things to be a candidate. Now, does that mean you can't be an activist? Of course not. Activism is different than being a candidate, right? So with support, a candidate is someone who has to be able to be upfront and answer questions and not just be rhetoric. And very few of us can do that well. So you've got to be able to do that, speak well, move people, talk to people from both the left and the right, also very hard, and actually be able to build a team and get people to want to give you money. That is not easy. I mean, I raise a lot of money, and it's not easy for me either. So it's not easy to raise money. It's not easy to do these things. It's not easy to build a team. You know, I'm setting up for my run for governor. I quit working last month. I don't work anymore. This is what I do. This is now my job. Right? Because I can't run a statewide campaign and still work. So you have to have the time. If you don't have the time, we have to have better candidates. I guess my whole thing is putting the ring in the volcano means having candidates that move people. And I would argue that people like Gary Johnson, people like Ron Paul did far more to move the party, not the movement necessarily, but the party, than any other bit of organizing or fundraising that you can imagine. People like that brought people to the party. We all know people who came to the party from Gary Johnson, or people came to the party from, you know, Ron Paul, or insert person here, whether it's, you know, if you go back further, maybe it's Harry Brown or whatever, right? Wherever you saw people come because of those people. We need more of them.
Yeah. One other thing that really pisses me off about libertarians is when you see Democrats or Republicans.
Oh, hold on one second. Mike, can you let us talk a little bit? Can you stop hogging the mic?
You want to throw a question in now, Mike? You got one?
Stop hogging the mic and let us talk a little bit. I'm getting tired of you. I'm getting tired of you interrupting us all the time.
Well, my two cents to chime in was I was a big fan of your campaign.
Thank you.
I thought you took the time to visit every single county in New York State, which is more than you could say about some of the other candidates who were running at the time. You very well tailored your message to each individual area based on local issues.
Yep.
I think that's the winning strategy if, you know, if there is one. You know,
I think you made a very valid point. And I would ask anyone who's running for office and anyone who's watching someone run for office to not be angry if they don't bring up your exact issue. Right. Mm-hmm. And for the person running who has their own pet issue to not be upset if the audiences bring up their issue. Right. Many times we run, we have our own pet issues. Like we really care about, maybe it's criminal justice or maybe the foreign wars or whatever is our thing that really bugs us. Right. Or in this case, maybe mandates now, whatever. But if you go into certain areas, they may not care. For example, when I'm in New York City, I rarely talk about guns. Does it mean all of a sudden I support gun control? Of course not.
Right.
But no one's going to ask me about it because in New York City, the Second Amendment's the second suggestion. So that's how it is in New York City. I get that. I don't care about that. I don't bring it up. Now, if I don't bring it up, someone will get mad at me. Hey, why didn't you tell them about the Second Amendment? Because they don't care. That's the reason. If I go upstate, they care all about it. So I focus on that. I focus on what the individual people care about. It doesn't mean if someone said, hey, Larry, do you hate guns? I would go, I wouldn't say that. I would still say my view on it if someone asked. But I want to focus on the people I'm in front of right now.
Well, the area I live in is Utica, and you were all railing about the hospital and eminent domain and all those things that were very relevant at the time, you know. And
absolutely.
Unfortunately, they're building that hospital right now.
I know. I was the one yelling, eminent domain is theft. That's correct.
Yep. Yes. Yep.
Now, if I go to New York City, they don't care about that.
Right.
Not
right.
A thing. So I not, and again, doesn't mean in New York City I'm for eminent domain. It means I talk about what the local people care about.
Exactly. Yeah. So, you know, as one of your biggest cheerleaders, all I can say is, you know, what are we going to do this time around to build upon what you did last time?
Well, I don't know if I've told everybody, but I'm trying to the best of my ability to learn from my last run, right? My last run, I did well. We got 100,000 votes. We raised $500,000. It was the longest Libertarian campaign, I think, ever. I don't think it was a longer one ever. And it was, I mean, it was a 14-month campaign. It was also the largest financially and also body-wise any non-presidential campaign. So it was a serious campaign. And most Libertarians, once I got my 2%, said, oh, loser, and walked away. Which they probably should have said, huh, Larry knows something. Why don't I have him help me run my campaign? That sadly didn't happen. But anyway, so when I ran that, I learned a lot. I made a lot of mistakes, to be very forward. And my team made tons of mistakes. But I don't blame my team, and I always say the same thing. I didn't fire anybody on my team for making a mistake. Not one person. And people made mistakes. I never fired them. And people got mad at me. Libertarians were like, they made a mistake. Someone's got to be fired. I was like, no. They're not being fired. It's my mistake. I accept responsibility. If you don't like it, don't vote for me. But I accept the responsibility. They have to learn. They have to learn so that when the next campaign comes, they won't do that and they'll help the next person. If I fire them for making an error, they just get pissed off and don't come back. So stay. Get better. We have to build our farm team. So I spent a lot of time figuring that out and learning what I have to do. So now this time when I'm run, I'm already raising money already. Way early, trying to raise as much as I possibly can. Last time I raised $500,000. I hope to raise $1 million this time. That's where I'm headed for right now. I'm also calling literally everybody who ever supported me. Literally, I'm calling everybody. I'm making this a grassroots campaign. I'm on the phone literally 4 hours every single day. I've called almost 1,000 people already. So I just keep calling. And I have 6,000 on my list, I think. So I'll be doing this for a while. So I'm still calling every day, trying to get people to remember, hey, remember what happened? Let's get together. You still with me? All those things. Letting them know what's going on. This is a grassroots campaign. If people don't go out and tell their neighbor, I can't win. But not just that. I'm considering running in the Republican primary also. You might go, oh my God, Larry's becoming a Republican. No, New York State is very specific in our rules. We have what's called fusion voting, which means I can actually be a Libertarian, registered Libertarian on Libertarian line. That's what I'm running as. I can also get another line on top of that one. So if I win the Republican primary, then I actually get listed as a Libertarian and again as Republican even though I'm a registered libertarian. So that can happen in New York State. It happens often in New York State, but usually it's Republican and conservatives. They share a line, that kind of thing. But I'm trying to do that. Now, if I lose the Republican primary, I'm still on as libertarian, but I got a bunch of Republicans who now know who I am, which they already do already, but they'll know even more. And I'll be able to hopefully get a debate stage with some Republicans and show them what a Republican should be like, if that makes any sense, because in New York State, they don't exist. And and so that'll be a good thing. But if I win, even better. But I'm not just that. I'm actually trying to get, I don't know if you know, Andrew Yang has left the Democratic Party.
He is now, news to me.
Yes, he left. He is now on his own. He is he's part of the Forward Party now. So I'm considering trying to get his line also. So I'd actually have a Forward line on top of it. So I'd have a Republican line, Libertarian line, and a Forward line. So I'd have a right line, a left line, and a Libertarian line. So that would open me up to New York City votes. It would open me up to pissed off Democrats. And I would be able to hopefully, in my perfect world, assuming I get this to happen, and I'm still working on this now. This is not a done deal. I'm working on it now. If I can make it happen, I'll create an actual coalition against establishment Democrats. And people say, well, Larry, why don't you grab a Democrat line? I could, in theory, in New York State, I could run in a Democrat primary and a Republican primary, theoretically. In practice, impossible. The establishment Democrats would never let me on their line in any circumstances, no matter what. That's never going to happen. Otherwise, I'd run in both. I absolutely would run in both of them.
Right.
But I can't.
I seem to remember Stephen Colbert threatening to run as a Democrat and a Republican back when he was doing a show on Comedy Central.
Because you can do that. It is absolutely possible in this thing. Yes. And in fact, if you look locally, you will sometimes find people who have two or three lines, Democrat, Republican, Independent. They have all three. It does happen. But it's locally, never at a state level.
Yeah, we're actually in Utah. We're trying to do that with Mike Lee, make it so that Mike Lee can run on the Libertarian and Republican line next year so that, you know, no one runs against him because he's a very Libertarian-leaning Republican.
I actually was with him in South Dakota doing Freedom Fest.
Freedom Fest, yeah.
I remember.
Oh, did he mention that?
No, not at all, but I just remember hanging out with him for a bit. I remember.
Yeah. Something that pisses me off about libertarians is they're very autistic. And what I mean by that is like they just focus on things that really don't matter, and they focus on dogmatism and, you know, not straying outside of their little bubble. And you know, you're talking about here, like trying to run on the Forward Party and the Republican Party and the Libertarian Party. You know, that's a real populist idea because you can appeal to people who aren't libertarians. And a lot of libertarians don't want to appeal to people who aren't libertarians. They only want to appeal to libertarians. And then when Republicans or Democrats start leaning libertarian because of crazy things that are happening, like you see a lot of Republicans now who actually, you know, hate the CIA or something, which is crazy. Like, what? Republicans hate the CIA now? And instead of just saying, like, welcome, you know, I'm so glad you feel that way, it's like, well, where were you 10 years ago? You know, and I mean, that's just a really big problem.
Let me touch a couple pieces of that. The first one is, why do you care? I don't.
Yeah.
I don't. There's a lot of libertarians who are jerks. That's true. Mm-hmm. And a lot of them happen to be ANCAPs, anarchists. So what? I need them in my party. If I don't have these people in my party, this party will become either Democrat light or Republican light. We have to have the hardcore people in the party. I'm the only mainstream candidate who says that. Everyone else who's mainstream goes, get them out, get rid of them, they make us look bad. I don't.
Right.
They, I believe, are the price of doing business. If I want a party that's not going to be co-opted, if I want a party that's not going to be taken over, I have to keep my hardcore people in the party. They're my defense mechanism. But not just that, they also allow me to have a North Star. I'm pointing towards them, right? Even though I may not be there yet, but I'm pointing towards them. So yeah, they can be a pain. It's true. And I feel they're important to have, even though they are a pain. Yes, I think we have to have them. But next, you don't have to feed them though. And I don't feed them, right? I don't go there and go, yeah, let me give you more. I don't do that. But the next thing I do is I also don't disrespect them. Mm-hmm. I don't feed them and I don't disrespect them. I realize they're important. I give them respect. We just disagree on certain things. And that's fine. All good. But something I try to do whenever I can, I try to get the more hardcore libertarians to understand something. I'm the recruiter. That's what I do. I don't bring you Marines. I bring you raw recruits. I'm the recruiter. So the people I'm bringing you aren't Marines. They're raw recruits. Right. So why don't you take all the knowledge and all the skills and experience you have and be a teacher versus a jerk? And then as I bring you these people, you should say, "Come, thank you, Larry. We'll take it from here." And you grab them and bring them in and turn them into ANCAPs. That would be awesome. You're not going to turn them into an ANCAP by yelling at them, but by showing them the way, you can do so. So my plea to any ANCAPs who are listening now, if you're a regular ANCAP that I know and you're a teacher, good, please keep doing that. If you know you're a jerk, I would ask you, please stop being a jerk and please be more of a teacher. You're probably going to ignore me if you're a jerk because you're a jerk, which is fine. So you're still my party. I still love you, but please understand it will be better if you would be more of a teacher than a jerk. I will keep bringing you recruits. The more of a teacher you are, the better off we are. An example I'll give you is when I was in New York City, this is years ago. I was very new to the party, probably 2013, in that area, 2014. I joined the party in 2012. So probably 2013, 2014, I'm at either a Queens or a Manhattan event here in New York City. And a young guy shows up, probably 19, 20 years old. And he's like, "Oh, I saw you guys on Eventbrite or wherever it was, Meetup or something. I'm so glad I came. Hey, you guys aren't really against NASA, are you?" And oh my God, did they beat him up. And I thought to myself, I didn't know any better. I was too new. I didn't know what to say. I just kind of watched. I was like, why did that guy never came back? Because we just beat him up. Instead of saying, "You know what? NASA, great. Why'd you come?" "Because I hate taxes." "Awesome. Let's talk about taxes now. We'll talk about NASA next week." Mm-hmm. Done. That's all you had to do. You didn't have to beat him up on NASA and show how smart you are. You didn't have to. You could have just said he cared about taxes, meet him where he is, show him the value of taxes. He comes in and goes, "Oh, you're right. This is all fiat garbage." "Yeah, it's all fiat garbage. You're right. All right. Now he's in. Now talk about NASA." Right. We don't do that. So I am with you on that. It is a pain, but so what? We need them. They're important. Otherwise, we lose the soul of our party. So we have to keep them, and I'm fine with that. We don't have to disrespect them. I don't. But we can also call them out when they're jerks. They shouldn't be jerks. They should be more teachers than jerk. And if they're better at being a teacher than being a jerk, we'll turn more people. We all know this. If you stay with us for more than a year, you're going to become more libertarian, or you will leave. If you stay with us for more than a year, you will become more libertarian, guaranteed. It's how it works. Otherwise, you're going to leave. So the goal should be to keep them here as long as we can. They'll become more libertarian. And even if they leave after a couple of years, they'll still vote for us when the right candidate comes by. And while I do want 7 billion libertarians, I'll take 1 billion plus 6 billion who will vote for us. I'll take it.
Yeah. Something that you've talked about a lot is, and you were just pointing to it there, is everybody is good at something different. Some people are good at campaigning. Some people are good at writing speeches. Some people are good at making podcasts or whatever, and everyone is always criticizing each other as to, "You're doing it the wrong way. You need to do it this way." And to your point, like, different strategies are going to attract different people, and every different strategy has a different place in the movement. So we really need to utilize everybody's strengths instead of trying to clone everybody into the same thing, right?
Well, this is the thing. People get mad at me often for saying things like, you know, for not getting mad at people who have different messages. I don't. I think we need all the messages, right? Because people come for different reasons. I remember myself, right? I came in 2012 because of Gary Johnson. And when I heard Gary Johnson speak in 2012, some of you are going to laugh. I thought he was a radical. That's where my head was. Like, if you can understand where my head was at that time, I thought Gary Johnson was radical. Now, clearly, I am far more radical than he is now. But for where I was in my world, I was not very political in 2012, right? That's not where my head was. I was running a business. My business was collapsing. I was fixing my life. I didn't care about politics at all. When I heard Gary Johnson speak, I was like, "What? Wait a minute. So So government isn't the answer to everything? What? That was radical to me. And then as time went on, because of that, I could hear him. But there are a lot of people who couldn't hear Gary Johnson. It just wasn't, they couldn't hear him. I could. In 2008, I couldn't hear Ron Paul. I couldn't hear him. He's another politician to me. I didn't hear it. I wasn't there. Other people flocked because of Ron Paul. So it really depends upon who the person is. I just want the individual, whoever you are, to know your audience. That's what I'm asking. Speak in a way that your audience will hear, right? I was talking to someone about a shirt that said, legalize recreational cocaine. And someone looked at it and went, see, that's why libertarians are bad. I'm like, no. There are some people who will gravitate to that message. I'm like, what do you mean? That's awesome. Yeah. And some will walk away. But there's a message for that person too. So again, to your point, Mike, we have to know who our audience is and just spin the message to our audience. And if you know you're someone who is always going to be screaming legalized recreational cocaine, then put yourself in the right areas to where that's going to land, right? Because that's who you are. You're going to connect with those people better than somebody else. And if you're more of a, I'll say, milquetoast libertarian, then go to those people because that's where you're going to connect. I want everybody to come. I am greedy. I want them all here. So they're all good.
So what do we think about the fact that, you know, getting the large number of votes that you got, suddenly New York State decides to just raise the hurdle because they feel like they can, you know? Mm-hmm. Yep. I think it shows that you're a threat and they need to do what they can to diminish whatever gains we made and party line access. And
they were hoping that I would go away. That was their hope. They thought Larry Sharpe will do what all the rest of them do. He'll run, then he'll go away. But I complain about that for libertarians all the time. I'm always complaining about that, right? Our presidential candidates, our governor candidates, they run once, lose, and go away. Now, not all do. Now, I'm very happy. I know some people aren't happy with Spike. Some people love Spike. I don't care. Here's why I love Spike, because he didn't go away.
Mm-hmm.
He's still here. Most of the other people before walk away. You don't see them.
Right?
Spike's still here. Good. That tells me that we're winning. That is my hope. Spike stayed. I stayed. Rainwater stayed. Harrington stayed. These guys didn't walk away. They're still here. And many times before, if you go back 5 years, 10 years, everybody left. They ran, lost, left. No. Rainwater's still here. Harrington's still here. I'm still here. Spike's still here. These are good signs. We stayed and we're growing. That's a critical piece. They thought, the Republicans, Democrats in New York State thought, oh, Larry will lose. He'll go away. Nope. Okay, he's doing well. He's building more libertarians. He's building. For those of you who don't know, there were only about 15 county affiliates in all of New York State when I started running out of 62 counties. Now there's 30 out of 62. Mm-hmm. We've doubled our county affiliates. Almost half our state has an affiliate in it. Is that insane? New York State. Yes, we built that. And they were like, whoa. And that's when they got rid of us. When they saw it, they still thought, well, that'll make Larry Sharpe go away. No, you don't realize I'm a Marine. When the whistle blows, I go over the top. It doesn't matter. It does not matter. We will attack and attack. We will fight until we are out of ammunition. That is what Marines do. We fight until we're out of ammunition. I still got ammo. I still got troops. We're still fighting. The war's not over. So I'm not quitting and I'm still going on. And the biggest part of this is now I have people coming to me. Because they know that because I kept crushing the state, because I kept supporting local people, raising money for them locally in New York State, that I kept doing it, that now I actually have, the people are coming to me because they know that I have a good 5 to 8% of the vote no matter what I do. They know that I've grown more than all. They have more name recognition across my state than, except for our current governor running. Anyone else running, I have more name recognition than the current governor running. That's it.
I think maybe we could take this opportunity to talk a little bit about what is the Larry Sharpe solution to vaccines, mandates, lockdowns, COVID, all the recent things that we've been dealing with since 2020.
Literally, for what most people didn't realize, I always have a policy or a plan. That, I think, is my strength, right? My strength is that I'm able to create policies and plans that to fix things. And that's from my business consulting background that I always come up with. Here's how we repair this environment to make things better so we have better outcomes. So in March of 2020, I literally put out an entire COVID plan. And if anyone cares, you can go to my Sharpway YouTube page. It is a separate playlist, and it literally says COVID solutions or COVID plan March 2020, and it's like six videos. And I gave the exact plan, how to fix everything, how to make things better without one mandate, without any government force. And I only went with what I knew then, right? What I knew then isn't what we know now. But with that, I still can say, if you look back at it, my plan would have given us better results than what we did in New York State. And I left it up there. And it's imperfect because, again, I went with what I knew. I even explained how to pay for it at a national level if we had to do lockdowns, how to deal with the national level if we had to do this, which I did not want to do lockdowns. Then if we did, how to pay for it. And even no one bothered to pay any attention. So there was plans for everything. And the number one plan was the ultimate in transparency. That's the key, right? While government is bad at so many things, the one thing it can be good at for the people is it can be a good central repository for information. People, Americans still feel comfortable like calling 911 to get help, right? Going to a government website to get data. Now, sadly, now those are no longer true. After the horrible COVID responses, so many people no longer trust our institutions at all. And I would have broken that. What I would have done, a crazy idea. I would have been very simple to New York State. I would have said, hey, New Yorkers, here's what I believe is true. I don't know if it's true yet. Here's what I believe is true. And according to what the CDC is telling me and what I believe to be true, here is what we think New York State says you should do to be safe. And here's what we think you should do to have a retail establishment. This is not a requirement. It's what I believe to be true. And if that is true, awesome. That's true. Do it. But also, here's what other people think. So you can take my idea or someone else. They already have that. There's a thing called the Well Health Safety Seal. That's a private organization that has made their own rules. So private gets their rules. I get my rules. Other people get their rules. You can look at it. Now, I don't send out my inspectors to punish people who don't do what I say. I send out my inspectors. And if you do what I say, you get a stamp that says you are government approved. That's all. But you can stay open. You can do your business. And if the other people want to go out and put their stamps on, they can too. They don't punish you. It's open. Now what happens is now the local community decides whether they trust you or the government or the private sector or whatever. The community decides. If the community shuts you down, you get shut down. If the community doesn't shut you down, you don't. Follow your community, follow your customers, and what they say is fine. I ask one thing, transparency. Tell me what's working and what's not. Now, if I don't order you and use force, what happens now is when the information comes back, I can change my plan. I can say, we've worked on this for 3 months. This doesn't do anything. Here's the revised plan. I don't have to hold my guns. But if I start punishing you for it, and I start fining you for it, and I start jailing you for it, or firing you for it, or whatever it is, I can't back away now. Now I have to double down because now those fines I gave you or the firing is all wrong now and you can sue me and call me a bad guy. Once you move to force, you can't back down. That's why they keep doubling down because they led with force. If they simply would have led with options, you can change. They led with force. You can't back down.
Right. So well, it's almost...
Go ahead, Mike.
I was just gonna say the reaction to COVID was worse than the disease because of all the, you know, the economic impacts, the people who are displaced, you know.
Absolutely. I get 100%.
Yeah. Yeah.
So can I address some of the comments?
Yeah, absolutely. Which one?
If you don't mind. Let's see. Blaze says Larry's by far, in my opinion, the most tact politician. Oh, thank you. I appreciate that. Offer says, donated $25. Thank you. John says, how can real campaign for anyone happen to make level playing field for third parties? I'm going to tell you how. That's a hard one. But in reality, the best way to make a level playing field is, again, total transparency. Two things have to happen to make this actually work well. Number one, Corporations are not people, right? That has to end. That idea that a PAC or a union or whatever can give money to a campaign is a terrible idea. There should be no PACs, nothing should be able to give to a candidate except an individual, because those things can't vote. Only an individual can. So they have rights. Corporations shouldn't have rights. If corporations are people, then corporations can't give you any information because they have Fifth Amendment rights. They don't incriminate themselves, do they? But I guess they do. Don't they get their own guns? They don't. So they don't have rights. Why you give them just one right and not the rest? Makes no sense. They're not people. So that's number one. And number two, let people do whatever they want to do with their money. If I want to give all my money to Shane Hazel running in Georgia, he wouldn't take it. I'm teasing you, Shane. You should be raising money. But if I wanted to give all of my money to Shane Hazel, I bug him all the time about raising money. So if I want to give all my money to Shane, I should be able to. All of it if I want to, as long as it's transparent. He's got to have his website. Larry Sharp gave me all of his money. That's got to be there. And you might go, but then rich people will take over the world. First off, they already have. But second, they're not going to win the election. If that was true, we'd have President Bloomberg right now, wouldn't we? And next month, we'd have President Bezos. Know that those two things are going to happen. You can have all the money you want. That's not how you win. Winning is not about money. It's about popularity. That's what matters for winning. So you do those two things, you'll have fair finance, open finance. People will be able to see exactly who's getting what. This can be done, but just difficult. That's all.
Yeah. My question was, I don't know what the demographics look like for people who have left New York over the last year, but have a lot of your supporters gone away? Is that an issue at all, you think?
It's actually a big problem. I mean, I've probably called, I'm going to guess, 1,000 people in that area already, and a good 10 to 15% have already left, and not longer in the state. I mean, a lot already gone. I see today I was calling like 10 people I called, maybe 20 people, I don't remember how many called. I called a bunch, and at least 3 or 4 were like, yeah, already gone, Larry. Already in Florida, you know, already gone, already in Texas. They're already gone. Tennessee, they're leaving. Yes, it is. It's a big problem. I agree. Yes.
Yeah. So,
which
I mean,
which is why I want multiple lines. Right. And which is why I want pissed off Democrats. Right? Because I can't make impact without pissed off Democrats. In my state, I'm never going to get establishment Democrats to vote for me. But I can get pissed off Democrats to vote for me. And I think what we saw happening in New Jersey and in Virginia shows there are a lot of pissed off Democrats.
Yeah. And Republicans, especially in New York, because they've been fighting. And, you know, there were so many times I've heard people say, well, Larry Sharp has good ideas, but I don't want Cuomo to win, so I'm going to vote Republican.
That
because,
worked.
You know, and where did that get us, right?
Yes. Well, the thing I say all the time, particularly in my state, it's not true in every state, but in my state, what I tell them is, great. You for anyone in 2018 who voted for someone who wasn't me in 2018, what did it get you? And the room goes quiet. Yeah, it got you not the Republican and a Democrat who resigned in disgrace. Win-win? I'm not sure. And let me ask you, from 2018, who's still here? Only me. Everyone else went away because they always go away. They take your money and they go away.
Exactly. Right?
That's what they do. They take your money and they go away. I take your money too. Please give me money. I take your money too, but I don't go away. I stay here and I keep going. And I call people and I come on podcasts and I cross my state, right? If you invest in me, you're investing in me. You give your money to somebody else, take your money, you go away. I'm still here. So I tell them that often. But I'll go across the country. Let me be very clear across the country. Some people ask me, Larry, what if there was a chance for a terrible person to win or a person who's not so terrible, lesser two evils, and if you vote for the Libertarian candidate, the evil person might win, or the worst evil person might win. Aren't you going to vote to keep the more evil person out? No, no, because it's just a Band-Aid. Remember something. This is important for everyone who is a non-libertarian to understand. Bush got us Obama. Obama got us Trump. Trump got us Biden. Who's winning? Nobody. If you lean right, you're mad at two of them. If you lean left, you're mad at two of them. Either way, you're mad. They just rotated back and forth. So I'm going to vote libertarian in a desperate attempt to eventually get it big enough to just have impact. People always say, Larry, you libertarians, you're never going to get, you know, when it, you're not going to run everything. It's fine. I don't need 51%. Right now, literally right now, if we had three libertarians in the Senate, we'd run the Senate. Literally, we run the Senate because we are the swing vote. We're the Joe Manchin of the Senate with three libertarians. So we don't need a lot. We just need like three. That's all. Three in the Senate. Now, for next year, obviously, that's impossible. But for the next 4 or 5 years, that's possible. Could happen. If we get a couple of key people to make some big moves, we can do that. In my state, if I win the governorship, and I hope I do, I can tell you for sure we'll run the Senate because there are state senators who will turn libertarian on purpose so they can be the swing vote. So I'll get them automatically. So we'll already own the Senate. So it can be done. It just, it's difficult. Or you keep voting for the same people. And here's the worst part of it all. We think, we've been fooling ourselves for a long time. There are most Americans believe that we actually have a functioning democracy. We don't. How it actually works is the parties gerrymander all the districts. So the parties select the voters. The voters don't select the parties. The parties select the voters. So they know that these districts will always be red. These will always be blue. Life is good. They do that. Then the parties pick the candidates. So you don't get to pick them either. Since we know who's going to win, whoever the ruling party picks is the next leader. We have no say in this. We don't have any say. Our vote's useless. So why are you voting for something? Think about if you were in New York State. Why'd you bother voting for a Democrat or Republican? You knew Biden was going to win New York State. It was guaranteed. It didn't matter. Yep. Trump might have won the election. That's possible if he wins the election. He won in 2016, losing New York. But he was going to lose New York no matter what. It wasn't a swing state, right? It was going to Biden. Be like, I got to go vote for Trump. I got to vote for Biden. Why? You're fooling yourself. You're fooling yourself. We don't have a functioning democracy here. And New York State, well, I got to go vote for the Republicans so the Democrat doesn't win. He's going to win. It's 2.5 to 1 Democrat to Republican in New York State.
Yep.
A Republican hasn't won any statewide election, not senator, not governor, not comptroller, nothing, in 20 years.
I was going to say George Pataki was.
Correct.
In 20 years. Yep.
So I don't know what people are talking about. And again, I'm very specific to New York. Other states have different issues. I'm talking about New York.
So what, you know, there's the Free State Project going on. A lot of people are moving to Texas and Florida, like you said.
Yes.
And some people are saying, you know, everybody needs to do that. You need to get out of these blue states. They're just doomed to failure. But a lot of people live in these blue states. They've grown up there. They've got fourth generation farms from their, you know, their parents, grandparents, great grandparents. So what would you say to those people who say that the only way that we can win is through consolidation in places that respect liberty? What do you say? What is the case for staying in these states that seem like there's no chance of turning back?
I'm going to be very forward with everybody watching. You have to do what's right for you. That's really the truth. I don't want you to stay and bleed out in a state because, you know, you're worried about an ideology that's going to crush your family. I'm not mad at the people who leave New York State. I get it. It's our fault. We have a crappy government. Our state, by the way, and I'm going to pump my state real fast, is a beautiful, amazing state. It has everything you can imagine in this state, from farmland to the biggest city in the country, to mountains, to forests, to anything you can imagine, rivers, streams, lakes. It's a beautiful state. Our government is horribly oppressive. It's so bad that it literally breaks up families. The state itself is amazing. Our government is an embarrassment. And if it crushes you, you have to leave. I get it. One of the reasons why I'm running is because I'm in a position to where I can stop working for a year, get my butt kicked for a year, and still make this happen. Right? Last time, people teased me. I saw my last campaign. When I was done, people said, Larry, why don't you run again in 2020? Because I was broke. Literally, I went a year and a half out of salary. And I live in New York City. I have a wife and two kids. My wife doesn't work. I went without a salary for a year. You can imagine what my finances were. I was in heavy debt at the end of that campaign. And that's fine. It is what it is. I knew what I was getting myself into when I did it. I'm doing it again. I knew I was getting myself into, and that's what I'm doing. I'm not asking for your sympathy at all. I'm saying I decided to do it because I can do it at this point. If you can do it, please stay. If you are in a position to where you can, please stay and please fight. I'm in that position. I'm staying. I'm fighting. But if you can't, do what's right for your family. That's really what I feel. Do what's right for your family. I'm not mad at you. I'm disappointed that I couldn't make the state better faster for you to stay, because I wish I could have. But that's my view on that.
So, Larry, what do you think about economic opportunities in the state of New York these days?
I don't know what that means. Economic opportunity in New York. I've never heard of such a thing. Does that exist?
For me personally, I'm an over the road truck driver. The company I work for is in Missouri. You know, the opportunities that I had to start, you know, my wife and I own 10 acres and a small farm, you know, in upstate New York. I'm out on the road all the time because I can't find a job in New York State that pays me enough to live there and stay at home. You know,
I know. Look, the reality of it is New York is absolutely anti-business. Mm-hmm. And that's not just me saying it. There's data that proves that, right? New York is anti-business. It goes out of its way to shut things down. We go out of our way to make things difficult. So some of the things we do is things like, as an example, we have an insurance board in New York State. No other state has that, which makes insurance even harder and worse here in New York State, right? We're one of like six states, something like that, that actually forces every business to have workers' comp, not just for you having an accident on the job, which is normal, but also if you have an accident off the job. So any accident you have, you get paid by your company, no matter what. Why would I hire people? Right? And I've got to make sure that I have so much profit, so I have to hire a few people, because if one goes out, I'm finished. So it sets me up to make sure that I punish my employees, because I can't give them good salaries and I can't have them do, I have to do double the work because I can't afford. If one of them leaves, I'm literally finished. And the state will punish me. You've seen it in 5 seconds. The state always punishes first, asks questions later, if at all. When I do a lot of business consulting, it's part of what I do for my business, my day job that I used to have. Right. And I'll talk to those people who start small businesses. They go, Larry, I'm ready to start hiring employees. I say, great. Now the punishment begins. And they say, what? So, yeah. Now the state will begin to punish you. And they don't believe me. I said, no. As soon as you have an employee, the first thing the state will do is send you a bill for tons of money. I said, what? Yeah. First thing. And within a month, they get it. They go, oh, my God. I said, do not negotiate with them. Call your accountant. It's bogus. He'll get rid of it. That's New York State standard. They send it out. They scare the small business owner. The small business owner gets afraid, calls them, and they negotiate a price. It's literally extortion. So they'll tell you, oh, Reed, you started a business? You owe $40,000 in workers' comp. You own $80,000 in this or that to the state. You get afraid. You call up. They go, fine, we'll take $10,000. You give them $10,000. You didn't owe them anything. If you just knew that you had an accountant, the accountant goes, this is bogus, go away. And they go away. That's literally how New York State runs. And I can say that publicly because that's how it runs. That's true. That's a thing. So I'm not even afraid to say it. That's how New York runs. We are completely anti-business. Every one of our agencies, with one exception, and that is the New York City Department of Buildings, that's an exception. Every other agency in New York State is about telling businesses no. So all they do, their job is to tell businesses no. And so they do. Not just that, their secondary job is to collect money from those businesses. Again, except DOB, they don't do it. Everyone else does. That's how it works. Why is New York State Department of Buildings different? Because the real estate lobby is the largest lobby in New York City. That's the reason. I'm not joking. That's the reason. So anyway, no. I'm sorry. That's how New York City runs. It's a mobocracy. So it's just terrible. Well,
The other thing I see is, you know, there's so many real estate programs and pilot deals that don't, you know, the people who live there who are already paying the high taxes are getting undercut by the new businesses that come in because they get pilot deals and they get tax breaks and they get all these things. What about the rest of us? You know, it seems a little unfair. Yes.
What New York State does is New York State says we need business. So we'll bribe big business to come in. This is many states do this, but New York State's amazing at this. They do it all the time and it fails. I'm gonna be very clear on this. Literally every single time. I'm not exaggerating. It has never worked, not one time. What happens is they bring the company in, the company promises X number of jobs. They never match that number ever. It has never happened one time in the decades we've been doing this. They always fail to match those numbers. So they don't do it. There's no real punishment. Then the bribes go away, the company leaves, and the town is devastated. Rinse, repeat. That is literally upstate New York, across the entire state. My answer was instead, let's follow a Wyoming law. Wyoming says if you are a farmer in Wyoming and you agree to sell only locally, you are immune from all federal regulatory bodies. I say every single small business in New York State, period. If you are a small business and you agree that you will sell only in New York State, you're immune from all federal regulatory bodies. What does that mean? The small business owner who stays in New York State has a chance of competing because they're only worried about state level and local level issues. That's all. Right. They'll actually have some control over state and local issues because they live and vote in the local area and a state. They can actually have some control over their own regulation. Wouldn't that be amazing? And it would also encourage people to stay local, which I would like more localization. That would be a good idea. We should focus towards that. That's the kind of idea I talk about, right? Letting local business owners decide when they want to make that step. And if some business owner says, you know what? I'm ready to play with the big boys and I'm across the state lines. Awesome. You know what you're in for. Make the step when you're ready. Or you say, you know what? No, I like being the small local guy. I'm going to stay that until I retire. I don't want to go any further. Okay. Whatever makes you happy. And I think that's the key.
So do you think that left wingers are actually, you know, maybe more open to libertarian economics than they realize? Because I feel like we tend to look at right and left wingers as ideological beings. But I really don't think that most right and left wingers are very ideological. I think that they, for the most part, have grasped onto a couple issues, usually social issues, and then they've never actually really thought through why they believe everything they do about economics. And if you can describe a local co-op that doesn't have state regulations on it to a left winger, that will sound like a great thing. So do you think that we can kind of break through to some of these people on economics who identify as being on the left?
Sadly, we can, but I mean, good, we can, but sadly, we often don't use the right words.
Right.
Right. We use our own language, which the left hears as evil. So we say, it's the free market. They hear monopolies will crush us.
Right.
Mm-hmm. That's not what you said. You said free market. What they heard was monopolies will crush us. Let the market decide. What they hear is I get fired by big business. When you say capitalism, they hear crony capitalism where I have no chance.
Right.
So the words we use, and I know people get mad at me all the time, but Larry, that's the meaning of the word. It doesn't matter. In politics, it's not academia. This is politics. In academia, that person's correct. You would use the proper word with the right description. You're right. If you're writing a paper, writing a book, that's true. If I'm talking to people, the denotative meaning of a word is irrelevant. The connotative meaning of the word is what matters. How does that word feel? That's what matters when I'm doing politicking and talking to somebody. The actual meaning is irrelevant. When I'm writing in academia, the meaning does matter. The denotation matters. In law, denotation is all that matters. Absolutely. But I'm talking me talking to somebody, trying to get them to vote for me, trying to get them to write a check to me, trying to get them to support me, to tell friends about me. All that matters is the connotation of those words. So instead of me saying something like free market, I see, you heard me say it, let the community decide. You heard me say it. I didn't say let the market decide. It's not what I said. I said let the community decide. The left loves community.
Yep.
Loves community. So let's let the community decide. I didn't say if the market shut you down. What did I say? If your community shut you down. That's what I said. I try to speak the language of the people in front of me. So can we turn the left? Yes, if we speak their language. That's the critical piece. If we speak our language, they won't get it. That's the difference.
Yeah. Well, I know you got to get going. We've been talking for an hour, but Mike, why don't you tell all your fellow New Yorkers why they should vote for Larry, or, you know, what you think.
It's true. He's right. You should.
Well, you know, if Larry Sharp gets to be the governor who gets past the goalie, I will be one happy person. You know, I was a big fan last time around, and I hope we're able to double or triple or even win. You know, that would be the ultimate goal. So,
that's my sentiment. So let me be very clear. I'm going to run to win.
Mm-hmm.
Why? Because I don't know if lightning's going to strike or not. Right? Jesse Ventura became a governor in 1992, was it? Three, whenever it was. I forgot. 96? Whenever, in the 90s, whenever he became governor of Minnesota. I forgot what year it was. Could it happen to me? Sure. So I'm going to run hard. I'm going to run to win. I hope lightning strikes, and I hope I'm the governor of New York. That'd be awesome. But let's say I'm not. Let's say I'm not. If I get on that debate stage, that will change how people see libertarians. That will change how people see what we think and how we feel. That will help every other down-ticket candidate across this country. More importantly, if I'm able to actually raise a bunch of money and raise a big team, that team and donor base is available for our 2024 candidate, whoever that person is.
Mm-hmm.
Now, I build a big team. I build a donor base. Spike builds out the media base. We're ready for whoever wants to step up into that spot. And they can get moving, and we can win some electoral votes in 2024. We need to win some electoral votes in 2024. That needs to happen. Or this entire nation's in trouble. We have to make that happen. So I hope I win. I will run to win. I have a plan to win. You've heard my plan. I have a plan to actually win. I want it to be a winnable mm-hmm. race. If they screw up, or if lightning strikes, I'm the next governor. Awesome. If they don't, I get on that debate stage. I become popular enough to where now someone else is running for governor or president or whatever the case may be. And if I'm popular, this is literally a popularity contest. If I am more popular, I get in the right TV shows. I get in the right on the right podcasts. I get in front of the right people. And I start saying, you know, Coverdale is the guy to be president of the United States. So look, we got to write him checks. Got to get him out of that truck at night and get him into the White House. We got to do that. They might listen to me and they might help you out. So there is more here than just my victory, I hope.
All right, Larry. Well, how can people help you other than staying in New York? Where can people donate to you? Where can they keep up with you?
Well, let me be very forward. There are several things anyone can do. And one of them is a crazy minor thing, but it matters. Every time you see my stuff on social media, like and comment and share. And it doesn't matter if you're actually watching it. If you're scrolling by, you don't care about my stuff, stop for 3 seconds, like, hey, Larry, share, move on. Why? Because I'm getting shadow banned like there's no tomorrow. Facebook is evil to me. Twitter is bad to me. YouTube is not as bad, but they're terrible. They toned me down so bad because the second I started talking about how mandates were bad, shut me down.
Right.
My podcast was at 15 to 20,000 views every single day. Bloop, 3,000.
Wow.
Overnight. Now, though, if everyone likes, comments, and share, it breaks that algorithm, bam, 15,000 again. So I never get 5,000 or 3,000 or 7,000 views ever. I get under 3 or over 15. Every time, one of those two. That's how it always works. So if people will like and comment and share and I can break that algorithm, I'll be able to spread my word. So every little bit counts. Please do that. Excuse me. Second thing, you can donate. Every bit counts. LarrySharp.com/donate. Whatever you can give. Now I know Reed is saying, Larry, I'd like to give you $50,000. I know you would, Reed. I know you would, but you can't. Right? There's limitations. I'll get in trouble. You can only give me 44,000, okay? So don't go crazy, all right? So rip that check up, rewrite one, okay? Because I know you had that check for the grand. Rip it up, write another one. But I'm teasing, obviously. But there are no realistic limits for my race. you can give whatever you want. I am literally calling everybody. I'm calling people who gave me $29,000 and people who gave me $6. It doesn't matter. My average donation in 2018, raising $500,000 was about $85. That was my average donation. So I'm happy to take whatever you can give. It's going to go to the movement. You will see it. If you doubted me, look what I did in 2018. And my first report comes out January, so next month. Anything you can give now is going to help because it goes on that report. If that report is big, people take me seriously, and I get in all the cool shows.
All right, Larry. Well, you certainly have my support. You're one of the best of us, I think, and thank good you, luck. And I hope to get you back on the show soon.
Have a good night.